A Small Respite by Olympia M. Summary. This is Michael at the theater. For everything, there is a season. Michael watches as the first act of the play starts, and Dean, a small, fragile little thing, slowly rises from the ground. Of course, there is no real ground, just the stage. The circle that Castiel's departure left is missing. The fallen trees. The eerie stillness of earth laid flat and wasted under an angel's wings. There's just Dean, all struggling arms and body, crawling out from behind the stage. A single light on his wooden limbs. A figure that jerks and gasps and moves with difficulty. Michael feels sorrow. Dean had hated the idea of the Winchester Gospel and fought hard to preserve the world as he knew it. If Dean could have seen what this world would have become, if he could have predicted that the world would collapse under its own weight, divided and torn from wars not caused by demons, but human greed and fear, what would he have done? Dean would have done exactly the same. The wind gives him the answer, bringing with it dirt, the smells of food and urine. A young mother cradles her daughter tighter against her and shushes her. It is the story of the chosen, she whispers to her. Be quiet. Michael smiles at the little girl, and she reaches for his hand. Her mother looks at him with some worry, and then she relaxes, letting her daughter touch the stranger. Michael smiles again as tiny fingers close around his index finger and grip him tightly. And the girl giggles. The puppeteer is good, Michael has to admit that. He moves Dean with ease across the stage where Dean meets Sam again. Sam is dressed in black, to symbolize his demon blood. Everyone, especially those who can't read, must know that Sam is evil at this stage. The Sam marionette is made even more beautiful than Dean's, as evil is beautiful and seductive. And Ruby is the prettiest of them all. Her limbs exquisitely rendered, delicate and fragile, dressed in red and gold with glass rubies. As if she's a queen, and not the whore. He wiggles his finger and the little girl is distracted again. Her mother looks at him plaintively. She can't read the gospel to her child, and the little one must learn. That there was a time that the world was just as bleak, and even more threatened, but Dean saved them. That men are not all evil, but even when they are, the strength and conviction of a righteous man can change them. That destiny can be overcome, if there is faith. Castiel finally makes his first appearance. His marionette was never imposing or particularly beautiful. An angel must have no character and no individuality. An angel is part of a whole, a cog in the heavenly machine, as some would say. He's there to deliver a message and to guide, and to remind people that heaven is watching them and has not abandoned them. Even in these awful times, heaven still follows the human tragedy, and when the time comes, a messenger will guide their savior. This makes Michael even more sorrowful. He understands the need to reduce everyone in the gospel to simple characters representing one thing. Dean is righteous, Sam is evil, for now, and then he is good. Ruby is the whore, Uriel the betrayer, Bobby the helper, Castiel the messenger, Chuck the prophet. But as he watches these performances, and he has seen plenty so far, some good, some bad, some horrible, the more he misses the people behind the characters. He misses Sam's brilliant mind for strategy, and the way he could inspire people to do good. His appetite for complicated concoctions based on coffee. He misses Dean's quick anger, and the way he could move anyone's heart with his stubborn determinations. He longs for Uriel's sense of humor, even though most of his jokes started with, "A mud monkey goes to a bar." He even misses Chuck and his failed attempts to hide bottles of whiskey from the archangels. And Castiel. He was more than a messenger. He showed them that they could change and still follow their father's will. And Michael wishes he could show them or tell them all the things the plays have left out. All the things that the later editors of the Gospel have excised from the text. Every part of the Apocrypha, most of them now lost. That was the truth. On stage, Dean stabs Castiel because this is the righteous man fighting God. There's nothing about Dean's confusion and suspicion and lurking terror. Nothing about Castiel's confusion and understanding and growing interest. For the angels, this is Castiel's first temptation. But the humans have taken all this out of the simplistic interpretations of the gospel. Of course, not all is lost. Scholars still study the gospel seriously and debate over its finer points, but knowledge is kept secret and sacred. The few who can do that keep themselves apart, hiding behind tall walls or inside deep basements. But even they do not have the first versions of the gospel, the ones that were written by the prophet himself and were jealously preserved by the angels. But then, the time of angelic intervention passed, and the humans weren't as careful with their heritage. And even now that they are walking the earth again, they cannot bring back the glory of the past. On stage, Dean tries to stop Sam, but Ruby is behind him, guiding his thoughts. Castiel is absent. In reality, Castiel prayed and prayed for Dean and Sam until his body was locked in supplication. On stage, Dean and Sam raise a demon by accident, and Castiel is nowhere. In reality, Castiel argued and fought with Uriel, wanting to go to Dean's side and not being allowed. In the plays, Castiel is a messenger and does nothing for Dean. In reality, Castiel wanted everything for Dean. The little girl giggles again. Michael asks for permission, and her mother, tired, a little cold, hands her daughter over with some relief. She doesn't know why, but she trusts Michael. The girl is a small, fragile thing. Michael shares his warmth with her. "See, Deanna," he whispers to her ear, softly, so softly no one will hear him but the little one. "This is the story of your family." She smiles, and her eyes crinkle just like Dean's. They have the same eyes, Michael realizes, and wonders if this love was what Castiel felt when he looked at Dean in hell. This surge of protectiveness combined with the righteousness of destiny. For the angels, that was Castiel's first step. "One day, you'll be as strong as Dean," he promises as he cradles her. "And you'll take your people out of these dark times." Deanna reaches for his hair. Her grip is strong, but there is no pain when she pulls it. "I will help you," he says, and hopes to be as true and faithful to her as Castiel was to Dean. It is the least he can do. On stage, the curtain falls, letting people get a break before the second part starts. And Michael raises his eyes to heaven and prays. The second part will begin sooner than they think. The end. A Question of Hope by Olympia M. Michael observes Brother Jacob's progress. The eyes. They should be bluer, he says, as he pulls a jar of the most expensive blue that exists. Lapis lazuli. Just like the old days. The more the world changes, the more it remains the same. Jacob looks at it avidly, but dares not touch. "This is," he mutters, and lowers his eyes immediately. Michael studies the manuscript and hears Jacob's thoughts. Just because he's the bishop's friend, how rich is he? What he says, blasphemy. He lays his hand on the young man's shoulder and Jacob jumps. Michael smiles at him. "You will create a work of absolute beauty. Trust me." "The angels, they can't be too distinctive. It's wrong," he says, looking around worriedly, lowering his voice in case someone walks in the scriptorium. "Why?" "Because they are..." Jacob's voice trails off, his attention drawn back to the little jar. "Agents of fate?" "Yes." People used to think angels were extraordinarily beautiful because their form reflected the glory of the Father. Now they believe that the images showing the grace and beauty of angels reflect a world full of darkness, much like the one they live in which beauty was only to be found in the works of men. That beauty was a fiction and a comforting lie, and nothing but that. Each angel is as different from the other as each snowflake differs from the other. They are brothers and sisters, but not the same. Jacob's eyes widen. The knowledge that has been lost is immeasurable. He remembers walking the earth before, guiding the hands of scribes much like Jacob, full of youth and vigor and faith. Safeguarding the words of the prophets, he had guarded with his presence. Right, he commands, and the door closes smoothly. Right, he repeats, and Jacob stops looking at him and dips his pen into black ink. The page stays blank for only one more moment. Michael tells Jacob of another dark time, when the veil between the worlds of men and demons had become so thin, Earth was close to being an outpost of hell. A dark time, when the worlds of men and angels had grown so far apart, men could no longer hear the true voices of angels, and angels had required vessels to walk the earth. He speaks of sacrifices and the necessary cost to humans and angels alike. He speaks the speech of prophets, and the words burn his tongue. He remembers, and the images burn his eyes. All the truths that were lost flicker in his hands, and he has to keep his palms pressed together and his fingers steepled so that they won't burn through his skin. Jacob sweats on the paper as he writes, and Michael swipes his brow with the tip of a feather. He fans him gently with his wings, and the ink dries faster. Right, he says, and speaks of all the marvelous things that Dean and Sam saw, all the monsters they killed, the demons they slew, the souls they saved. The ink is replenished with a thought, and Michael takes the weariness from Jacob's wrists and fingers. Right. And that is all that matters. No. Castiel speaks as softly as always, voice subdued and gruff, all because Dean asked him once to turn down the volume, and Castiel never learned how not to obey an order from his dean. Why not? Jacob looks up, pen and page forgotten, at the strange sight before him. The world needs not this text. If knowledge was lost, then it was for a reason. Michael smiles at that. Castiel, who knows things the angels have forgotten, speaking against knowledge. It is but the true gospel, Michael tells him, the words of Chuck as he himself wrote them. He smiles again. The unabridged, unedited version. The one where there is full frontal Dean and wall slamming Sam and... Castiel blushes. He doesn't need Michael's mental reminder of how he loved Dean and how he did everything for him. This story needs to be remembered. It needs to be told again. These people need symbols, Castiel tells him, still protesting, not stories. They need characters that were flawed and human and who wavered in their faith, who made mistakes but made the right choices in the end. He keeps Jacob's mouth shut and asks for Castiel's understanding. They need to remember that heaven is beautiful and so are its angels, that there is peace at the end of their suffering, a perfect world where everything is forgiven. Castiel shakes his head. They need to fight for this world, not the next. It is something Dean would say, and Michael smiles again, even though he disagrees. They need to know that when they die, it's not the end. That their deaths will serve a purpose, and that they will be safe in the fields of our Father. He wills Castiel to see. Heaven makes martyrs. They should fight to live, Castiel insists, not to die in glorious martyrdom. But they will die, he says, and his voice makes the glass windows tremble and shriek. People will die because every war has casualties. It's better to die knowing there will be comfort and peace, and sense in their sacrifice. Yes, they will, Castiel agrees, but his voice lacks Michael's conviction. There's nothing but sorrow in his tone, and the windows, strained already, explode. Jacob tries to flee, and he places a hand on the young man's shoulder. My brother is sad, is all, he comforts him. Jacob looks away, trying to make himself as small as possible. There will be meaning and sense in their deaths. A new world will be built upon their sacrifice. They need not fight for heaven, only for earth. You speak so much like Dean. Not that he is surprised, just full of fondness. Castiel averts his gaze. There is no one but Dean in his thoughts and memories. Nothing but faith and respect and love. For Dean. All for Dean. Michael is not surprised at that either. The story has to be told. We need to leave a living monument of our words and deeds, Castiel. Jacob lifts up his head at that, eyes and mouth open in shock and surprise. The face of one who sees a miracle. The Castiel? Your devotion, forgotten, wasted, for what? Castiel, who is already uncomfortable enough, actually shifts his weight from one foot to the other. "Look at this child," he says, and makes Jacob look down again in embarrassment. "You are nothing but a messenger for him, and yet, look at how curious he is, how he tries not to make us realize that he is studying you. Why do you deny him knowledge of the truth?" Michael wonders if he should use Dean's nickname for his brother, but decides against it. Cass is even more devoted to Dean than Castiel, and so full of love and memories he can hardly move. And the last thing he needs is Castiel getting lost in the past, all its bittersweet sorrows and joys. "Please, Castiel, let this story be written." It is not that Castiel can stop him if Michael chooses to have it said and set on paper, but he respects and loves his brother too much. The world needs to remember not just the righteous man, but the angel who fought for him. How beautiful he was in his loyalty and how passionate in his rebellion. He does not add how he wants the world to know again about the grace of heaven and how it shines, nor how he wants the world to remember how even the mightiest of heaven had learned humility from the lowest of angels. He keeps his thoughts secret and hidden because Castiel still thinks he's the lowest of angels and would only fidget in embarrassment before denying everything. Another thing he learned from Dean. Why? What purpose would it serve? Michael shares a look with Jacob. The young man agrees with him. Castiel is either an idiot or blind. "Because," Jacob says, with just a touch of encouragement from Michael, "the truth must be told." He blushes furiously when Castiel turns to study him, but Michael steadies him. "And we need to know that angels fought for us in the past, and hope that they will fight again. Hope is..." Jacob struggles to find the right word. "What humans live on," Castiel murmurs, and he thinks of Dean again and his endless hope and resilience. "You may write this story," he tells Jacob. He flies away as soundlessly as he flew in, and Michael lets go of Jacob. "Did you see how blue his eyes are?" Jacob nods, too stunned by everything to speak, most of all his own audacity to address an angel. "Can you paint his likeness?" Jacob nods again, and he's reaching for his pen. Michael watches him draw as accurate a picture of Castiel as he can. He knows that it will be in the middle of the night when Jacob will realize that Michael addressed Castiel as his brother, and what that means. It will be in 2 months from now that Jacob will realize that Michael will never visit him again, but all the words will be in his mind, restless birds seeking refuge in paper and ink. Each word written down will make the burning inside him abate, and the itchiness inside his skin calm. It will be in 30 years from now that Jacob will finish his work, the complete Winchester Gospels, as they have never been seen before, with all of Dean's conquests and victories meticulously chronicled, including his greatest one, and as far as Michael is concerned, it's not the one against Lucifer. He knows that no one will see this gospel while Jacob is working on it, Jacob being scared and possessive in equal measure. He also knows that when it will be discovered on Jacob's desk, people will be shocked and horrified and fascinated by it. They will try to burn it, but Michael will protect it from the flames. They will try to tear it apart, but Castiel will mend it carefully and fix every damage. They will sell it and hide it, and it will travel the length and width of the earth. And people will learn the truth, whisper it among themselves, and it will give them hope. But Michael tells nothing of these to Jacob. He fills his head with words and his mind with images and carves his sigil on his back and asks, "Aren't angels beautiful? Do you see how they burn? How they act on behalf of fate?" Jacob nods and draws, never lifting his head up, not realizing his eyes are burnt and useless, and without Michael's strength, he would have died already. Never realizing that it's with grace that he now sees and writes. Angels cannot create as humans do, but Michael tries, because they need hope too. The end.